Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's program. Coming up in just a few moments, the campaign to end capital punishment in the United States goes on, despite a recent setback in the state of Kentucky. And the bishops of England and Wales meet to discuss the challenges of immigration, biotechnology, and charitable giving. Stay with me, Philippa Hitchin, for the next half hour of our English feature programme. The changing face of the Church, the challenges presented by the latest biotechnology bill, and the need to encourage charitable giving as a profound expression of faith. Those were three of the main items up for discussion at a recent meeting of the bishops of England and Wales. The bishops meet regularly twice a year to talk about challenges facing their church and ways of best responding to the needs of Catholics in the UK today. At this Low Week meeting, the bishops heard from a couple of guest speakers, including a scientist specialised in the latest fertilisation and embryology research, as well as the head of the Vatican's Cor Unum Council for International Aid and Development.
Yes, Cardinal Cordes is involved at the request of the Holy Father, going around to visit different bishops' conferences to speak with them about the teaching in Deus Caritas Est.
Monsignor Andrew Summersgill is General Secretary of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales.
When he spoke with the bishops, he gave some interesting statistics about the level of charitable giving which takes place within Britain, and that it's relatively high. It compares very well with most of the places in the developed world. And he went on to speak about the Pope's teaching, particularly in the first part of Deus Caritas Est, where charity and love are not simply the action, but it is the person who is involved in the action that is important. And the challenge, therefore, for Catholic charity and Catholic charitable organisations is to ensure that they are true to that very personal aspect of charity, that it is the giving of self which is as important as the giving of help, of assistance, of money. And that was promoted an interesting discussion with the bishops as we look at how that, for example, translates within England and Wales to the work which is done by CAFOD, which is the Caritas agency in England and Wales, and how the work of CAFOD and the people who therefore work within CAFOD are very much trying to live that aspect of the teaching of Deus Caritas Est, and that it is as much the communion of the Church which underpins the work of an agency like CAFOD or the Caritas agencies, as well as the giving of gifts and support and aid and development.
Would you agree, though, that it is increasingly difficult for specifically Catholic agencies to maintain this very particular identity in what the Cardinal talked about as a rapidly changing environment in Britain?
I think it can be if you are not rooted in the community of faith, in the community of the Church. I would say that one of the successful aspects of the work of CAFOD is that it is very strongly identified with the Catholic Church. And although a lot of its funding comes from statutory funding, because in this country the government is one of the major providers of benefit and development, but the advantage, if you like, for the government in using an agency like CAFOD is its rootedness both in the community from which it comes and the community to which aid and development is being directed, because those personal faith community contacts mean that the development and the aid that is being given is far more beneficial, because you have another strand, if you like, underpinning the development that's taking place.
You say that the level of charitable giving there in the UK is particularly high. Now, would that be especially from faith communities, or is this a more general level of giving? And why would you say that is so high?
I think certainly it is in faith communities, because I think the faith communities understand that charity is an expression of one's belief and the realization of the commandment to love your neighbour as yourself, which is what we would say. Maybe other faiths wouldn't quite put it in that context. On top of that, I think there is, in this country, there is a general sense of giving, and this may sound a strange thing to say, but charity is almost quite popular, and you look at some of the quite spectacular charitable events that take place in this country, things like sports relief, children in need, that kind of thing, they become almost fashionable. And so I think they do quite naturally raise the level of giving. And it's not unusual to be out and about in town and city centres in this country, particularly at the weekend, and to be approached to give for recognised causes. And you find that most people will react very well to that kind of thing.
Another area you were discussing is this very controversial human fertilisation and embryology bill, which is currently going through Parliament there. It's very highly contested, not just by faith groups, but the Catholic Church has been really mobilising all efforts, hasn't it, to try and get this into a broader debate before any kind of legislation is passed.
Certainly, the bishops in England and Wales, and also the bishops in Scotland, are very heavily engaged in trying to raise awareness of the consequences of the proposed legislation. And I think one of the concerns that the bishops have is that there is a lack of understanding of what really is being proposed within the legislation, and also what the science is and the state of the science behind the legislation. And as part of the meeting, the bishops took time to receive a briefing from scientists, well, a scientist who is involved in stem cell research, which is adult stem cell research. And he was able to talk about the very real progresses that take place in terms of adult stem cell research, and the benefits that it is already delivering over and against the proposals to develop embryonic stem cell research, which as yet doesn't really appear to have delivered any benefits whatsoever, notwithstanding the very grave and real ethical and moral concerns around the proposals that are being put forward, and indeed some of the practice that already sadly exists in this country. And that was a very helpful discussion for the bishops, because it allows them to bring together the teaching of the Church and the ethical and moral dimensions which flow from that, together with at least a very, I won't say basic, but a slightly more informed understanding of the actual state of science. And one of the things that the bishops are trying to do is to develop that discussion and to be able to, with scientists, to be able to say, can we bring together the ethical and moral concerns that we have with the scientific facts as they are? Because in the debate that is going on, it seems that sometimes there isn't a complete coherence between the arguments that are going on. Another sort of more practical consideration that the bishops are considering, along with some of the other bishops' conferences, particularly in the Anglophone world and maybe especially, I think, in Australia, they are looking at whether they can provide some sort of funding. It can't be a lot, but particularly from funds that are collected from the Church during the celebration of the Day for Life, to see whether they can direct some small amount of that funding towards ethical stem cell research, just to be able to say, look, we have an ethical and a moral position on this, and we're also trying to use what we have to influence science with which we can agree.
What kind of forum are you looking for to be able to discuss these issues? I mean, they are very complex scientific questions, and there has been a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of bad media reporting about these particular issues that are contained in the bill.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that we are looking for is an opportunity to be able to discuss these matters in a scientific and in a moral framework with scientists, with people who are involved in the day-to-day research that goes on in these matters. And indeed, there are many people in the scientific community who would welcome the opportunity to be able to discuss that. So that is something that we're quite actively pursuing at the moment.
What kind of forum, what kind of committee or organisation would you like to see where this might be possible? Because there are, of course, many scientists who don't believe that the church's views would be welcome on these kind of debates.
Yeah, well, I think there are two levels to that question, really. The first is the one I was just referring to, which is that discussion about between science and the moral aspects. The second is then what the political will is and can be around those questions. And one of the positions that our bishops have always taken is that it would be valuable in this country and a service to this country to have what we are referring to as a National Bioethics Commission, because at the moment, the decisions which basically involve licensing for this research to be able to take place, those decisions are taken almost in a vacuum, or certainly in an almost highly politically charged environment. And what our bishops, together with the bishops of Scotland, have been saying is that in this country, in Britain, we need to really look very carefully at bringing together the many different strands that there are in coming to decisions like this. And of course, not everybody is going to agree with everybody else, but to take reflections like this out of a highly charged atmosphere and to make sure that all elements of a question are considered would be of service to the common good and of service to the people of this country.
Moving on to look at some of the other important issues that you were discussing at this meeting, there was a new statement on migrants, wasn't there, reflecting really the way the face of the Catholic Church has changed quite dramatically in the last few years.
That's true. Anybody visiting a Catholic church in most of the parts of this country will now see that the congregations and the people who make up the church are very diverse indeed. And in a way, that's part of our history. This has always been a country where, particularly for the Catholic Church, it has been renewed and reinvigorated by people coming to settle here. And the bishops, for quite some time, have been reflecting on how to articulate the quite clear teaching of the Church on migration, on the right of migration, and on the imperative to welcome. And so we have been working on a statement which is called The Mission of the Church to Migrants in England and Wales. And it contains within it fairly practical recommendations to existing communities as to how they may become more welcoming to people who are moving to settle in this country.
Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor himself has been involved with the Polish community, one of the largest migrant communities perhaps within the Catholic Church today. He went to Poland, didn't he, to discuss ways in which the Church could be increasingly helpful in welcoming these people.
That's true. The Polish mission to the Church in this country is a very well and long established mission. It was established in the immediate aftermath of the Second World War. And with the large numbers of Polish people coming into this country, the bishops felt that it was important to be together with the Polish bishops in looking at how we can provide the most appropriate and the best possible pastoral care for the different communities which are now being established in this country. So Cardinal Cormac, on behalf of all the bishops, and at the invitation of the Polish bishops, went to speak with them at the beginning of March. And it was agreed that the two conferences should establish a joint commission that can look at the impact of Polish people coming to this country and how we might best serve them, because there are various models at work at the moment in pastoral care. There is the Polish mission that I talked about. Then there are certain bilateral arrangements with individual dioceses, and also then there are Polish religious working quite widely now in England and Wales and in Scotland as well. And therefore, to be able to ensure that there is a coherence to that is quite important, and so we're looking forward to being able to develop that work as soon as we can.
And my thanks there to Monsignor Andrew Summers-Gill, General Secretary of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. The European Union this week appealed to the governor of the US state of Kentucky to commute the execution of a convicted killer to life imprisonment. Earlier this month, America's Supreme Court ruled that the use of lethal injections to execute prisoners did not violate the Constitution as a form of cruel and inhumane punishment. The decision, supported by 7 judges with just 2 against, means that many US states may now lift a moratorium on executions that had been in place while the highest court considered the case brought by 2 death row inmates in Kentucky. Most states now use the 3-drug lethal injection method, but in recent years there have been a number of executions in which the drugs failed to take effect immediately, with witnesses reporting prisoners taking up to 30 minutes to die. This latest development came on the second day of Pope Benedict's pastoral visit to the United States. It marks a big setback for anti-death penalty campaigners, especially for Catholics, who were hoping that some of the Supreme Court judges might follow the Church's teaching on this issue.
It is primarily the 5 Catholic justices on the U.S. Supreme Court who continue to sustain and keep the death penalty in America in operation.
Dale Resinella is a Catholic lay chaplain to prisoners on Florida's death row and solitary confinement cells. He's been travelling around Italy this month with his wife Susan, who also ministers to death row families, educating young people about the anti-death penalty campaign in the United States. Just before he returned to America, Dale came to Vatican Radio to tell me more about what this latest development means for him and his work.
It's very, very disappointing. Every time a major case is before the U.S. Supreme Court, their first decision, which isn't written, but which must be made before they make a written decision in the case, must be whether to deal with it as narrowly as possible, just the very, very minute specifics of the facts, or to deal with it as broadly as possible. In this case, there was the potential to deal with it as broadly as possible and to say simply that capital punishment is cruel and inhumane, it's unnecessary, and it's not constitutional in this day and age in a first world democracy. That's what we had hoped for. They opted to make the decision as narrowly as possible, so narrowly that one of the judges that were in the majority, 7-2, said, because of precedent and the narrowness of our scope in this case, I must go along with the majority. But I'm going on record that capital punishment should be stopped in the United States. It's cruel and inhumane, period. So it was a very disappointing decision. And what it does mean immediately is that the execution machinery is going to restart.
How much is this decision there in Kentucky likely to influence, though, the other states in that area, in that southern region?
Well, it's such a strange situation. We have 38 states that have the death penalty. But even of those 38, five have never used it. Another six have only used it one time in 31 years. Almost 91% of the executions in America in the last 31 years have all been concentrated in just 14 states. For the most part, the states with the lowest percentage of Catholics. These states have been waiting for this decision, and this includes Florida. And what we anticipate is now that this lethal injection protocol has received a nod from the U.S. Supreme Court, we're going to see an attempt by the states to catch up on their executions. And unfortunately, we're expecting a flurry of executions in 2008.
So where do you go from here? As you say, this is a very disappointing step in what seemed to be slow but sure progress towards the abolition, or at least a permanent moratorium on the death penalty in the states.
Well, there's two aspects to that question, Philippa. First of all, one is personal and the other is in terms of the ministry work. Monday morning, I will be on death row with the retired Bishop John Snyder, who goes with me twice a month to distribute communion and sacraments. And the most immediate impact is we will be ministering to the men who are now anticipating the effect of this decision on their life immediately. That's the immediate effect of this decision. A longer effect is feeling a need to somehow bring the awareness of our Catholic justices on the U.S. Supreme Court to the reality that the death penalty is a respect life issue. When partial birth abortion was before the U.S. Supreme Court about a year and a half ago, the five Catholic justices stood courageously and sustained the right of the states to ban partial birth abortion. It was absolutely the right decision morally, ethically, and legally. But somehow they have not yet heard that the death penalty is a respect life issue, and it is primarily the five Catholic justices on the U.S. Supreme Court who continue to sustain and keep the death penalty in America in operation.
Why is this? Are the church leaders not making their voice heard clearly enough?
The bishops in America have been very clear. In fact, they have produced materials written and a DVD, which Susan and I use in all our talks to Catholic groups in the United States. The materials and resources they have provided are phenomenal. And yet, as we go around Florida and around the United States, speaking to Catholic churches, to Catholic Respect Life organizations, people who have been involved in fighting the culture of death for three decades, they constantly come to us afterwards and say, I had no idea that the Catholic Church has a position on the death penalty. So somehow the word has not yet gotten down to the people in the pew. So we really are in need of the popular Catholic media, EWTN, Catholic Answers, the TV and radio media that the most ordinary Catholics get so much of their Catholic information from when they're not in church on Sunday. We really need them to emphasize the church's teaching on this issue and to emphasize the leadership of the Catholic bishops so that this teaching is disseminated to the Catholics at large, and especially to our wonderful five Catholics on the U.S. Supreme Court, who need to know that this is not just an issue of legality, this is an issue of morality and ethics, and that the death penalty in America is cruel and unnecessary, and it needs to stop.
You're also working at the same time as within the Catholic community. You're also trying to reach out, aren't you, particularly to that very strong Baptist presence down there in those southern states which maintain the use of the death penalty?
Absolutely. And it's essential that we do that in order to end the death penalty in the United States. If you look at the 8 most Catholic states in the United States, the total executions in 31 years for all states put together is 2. When you look at the 10 states that have the least percentage of Catholics, they have an average of over 32 executions per year. The Baptist Bible Belt is where the death penalty is taking place in the United States. Now, 10 years ago, the leadership of this large religious phenomenon was the Southern Baptist Convention, and many churches followed their lead, and they were saying very strictly that the Bible mandates the death penalty, that to go against the death penalty is to go against God's word. We have been working, not just but many others, in the United States to correct this misreading of Scripture. That was the reason I wrote my book, The Biblical Truth About America's Death Penalty. And when I was on a radio show from Washington, D.C. about 2 months ago, opposite the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, which is kind of their version of the Vatican, he was very clear that Scripture does not mandate the death penalty. It provides the death penalty as an option that can be used by government, and for policy reasons, they recommend that we have it. Well, this is massive. This is a massive change, and so we are able to say that on the religious front, the battle has been won, but just as with the Catholics in the pew getting the message from the bishops, we have to make sure that the Baptists and the Protestants in the Bible Belt in the pews get the message that this is not mandated by Scripture, that reason can intervene and make a decision. And of course, when reason intervenes on the American death penalty, the death penalty's over. It's an abomination. All the facts about what it does to people, the racial bias, the bias against the poor, the percentage of mentally ill that are facing execution, on and on and on. When reason comes to bear on the reality of the American death penalty, it's over. So we look at our work as being one of education, educating Catholics on what the church teaches and what the reality is, and educating our Protestant brothers and sisters on what the Bible really says and what the reality really is. And as people become educated to both of those things, we believe we will see an end to this. But we must also educate our 5 Catholic Supreme Court justices.
My thanks there to Dale Resinella, Catholic lay chaplain to prisoners on Florida's death row. You can find out more about his ministry and that of his wife Susan on their website. Look them up at www.iwasinprison.org. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow if you can, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.